Welcome to episode 269 of the Active Photographer Podcast, your behind-the-scenes glimpse into the day-to-day life of a working professional photographer, with me, Giles Babbage. In this week's show, I'm talking about the kit used during a day-long photo shoot earlier this week. Now, the photography here was for one of my Outdoor Impact package clients, and involved a day moving around non-stop between locations here on the South Coast. For this reason, I had to travel relatively light, whilst at the same time, of course, ensuring I had everything I needed to get the job done. So, no more to say, let's just crack on, shall we? Welcome, one and all, to The Active Photographer, episode 269! It is just after 4:30 in the afternoon, and as I record this, it's the middle of the week, it's a Wednesday. Now, in the past hour or so, I've just got back from a shoot, and so what I thought I'd do is, because I need to unpack my my backpack with all my camera gear in, I thought I'd just talk through some of the kit that I took with me and, you know, talk about some of the shots along the way. Now, I will at a later date, I expect, be going through the specific shots and talking specifically about the technical considerations, but this is just an overview of the equipment. So today started with an early start. It was a 5:30 a.m. start because we had to go and shoot the sunrise. And sunrise was meant to be about 7:20. So we met at 6:30, drove to the location, and that was great. Now, these shots were for some publicity shots based on my storytelling package, the Outdoor Impact package. The client paid for the package, and this is the starting point. Aside from the research and the conversations and gathering information and what have you, this was the starting point for the actual image making process. So an early start, and my main consideration to begin with in that respect was that I needed to work fairly light, and because we'd be walking around, and this is based around the South Coast, sort of, you know, Portsmouth and outlying towns and so this sort of area, everything that I needed for the day would have to be carried. And knowing the terrain, we're sort of down on the beach, we're going up steps, we were going sort of like underpasses and sort of mucky tracks. Very often I will chuck my Pelly 1510 roller cases in the boot of the car and off we go, and you get the kit out and whatever. But we were walking around. So the first thing that I had to decide on was the bag. And for this, I basically went for a really kind of like sort of old school, I suppose you'd call it, backpack. Now, this particular one, it's from Lowepro, and it's the Mini Trekker AW, I believe. They have produced more recent versions of it, different incarnations. I have also myself been using, and I very often do use, one coincidentally I have here, called the Flipside Trek BP450 AW. And so the reason I picked this bag is because it's pretty compact, but you can cram a load of stuff in it. You know, as you will hear, it was basically what I took was a couple of cameras, two or three lenses, some lighting, and you know, it's really rather good. And because it's quite old now, it's become so, like, the padding and protection is very good still, but it's so kind of malleable. It's, you know, it's a really well-worn in bag. So that was my consideration. Let's move a few bits out of the way here. So I took everything out of my Pelly cases, and what I'm going to do actually is just open those up, because it's one of those things that'd be very easy to think, oh, I'll do it later, or I'll do it tomorrow, whatever. You know, as you go along, pack everything away, put it where it needs to be. Now, my first priority is always to back up my images, and I've already done that. So they're on two memory cards, because I used one card as the main card with a second with backup, and I actually backed up to JPEG on that occasion. Sometimes I do RAW, other times depends on the shoot and, you know, the issues of what if. You know, sometimes I'll just have one card, you know, once one fills up it will start writing to the other. So on this occasion, backed up to two cards. I've also backed up the images, the full RAW files. Those are backed up to an external hard drive. And it will be from those that I work the images. So back to the kit. In here, and a lot of you know that I haven't updated my cameras for a long time. It's certainly on the cards, but, you know, I'm using what I've got, and the quality's there, people are happy, you know. Realistically, I would start at a point where I reinvest. I'm going to be looking at mirrorless, so it's a whole other, you know, reinvestment in that sort of thing. So, you know, I have reasons. So, let's start with cameras, first of all. My main camera that I was using here was a Nikon D800, which, yeah, you know, still nice, still does the job. And my main lens, actually no, I'm going to go on to lenses in a minute. So D800 was the camera I used basically the whole time. I also had my old D3, just in case there was some sort of low light situations where I know that would excel. But in the event, that camera, that just stayed in the bag, didn't get used. Let's move across here. Okay, I'm going to put stuff away as I go. Move the Velcro out of the way. There we go. And I had three lenses with me. I had the 24-70 f/2.8, which is a lovely kind of, you know, standard zoom lens, really... really flexible. That was really good. Let's just pop that in here. Okay. I also had... Whoops. Okay. I also had the... what was it? The 80-200 f2.8. Didn't actually use that in the end. Didn't need any long lens shots on this occasion. I'm going to just take the... Oops. The 80-200, because of the dimensions of the bag, remains attached to the camera. So let's take that off. There we go. Camera can go in as well. Put the rear cap on the lens. And then that can go where it needs to. I also took one of my favourite lenses. You will have heard me talk about this if you're a regular listener, the AFS Nikkor 35mm f1.8. Really nice, sharp lens for portraits. That's what I used it for today. Obviously, low light, it's good for low light, but that's a really nice lens there. And whilst I didn't use it, I always throw in the Sigma 10-20. That's a f... 5.6, I think. That always goes in. Like I say, it's super wide, it has its uses, but I use it sparingly. So that was the cameras. Have a look, we've gone to lighting now. The way that I use lighting is, it might surprise you. At the end of the day, light is light. If you are going to, if you're going to use flashlight, for example, you can use portable lights, you can sort of flash gun speed lights, you can use bigger studio, portable studio flashlights, that sort of thing. You know, you can use constant light, LED panels, all that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, light has its own quality, depending what you use. And there are different ways that you can, you know, use TTL metering to kind of like have the camera work out the lighting ratios and all the rest of it. I'm very traditional, and because of that, because I work manually setting the shutter speed and the aperture and the flash output relative to the subject, I do that all manually. I am quite happy to use older flash guns because essentially they're just that sort of lighting output. So I have got here, and there's the story here, I have got two Nikon SB800 flashes, which are fairly old now, and the story goes that one of them worked absolutely fine, and the other one, as I look at it, has got a lovely kind of bleed on the LCD display, and the display basically doesn't show anything, because what happened, I was packing my case in a hurry one day, put the lid down, you know, I didn't slam it, put it down as normal, but something at the very last second shifted in one of the pockets, and something pushed down on the LCD. It didn't even crack the plastic, but it was enough to cause some internal damage on the screen, and now the flash works, but only in a way that I can't actually see what the outputs are. And the buttons, whilst they are technically would still work, there's no point using them because I don't know what I'm adjusting. I can't see anything on the screen. So that one comes as a spare because I can still use it, you know, rather than working in ratios like full power, half, quarter, eighth, whatever. I can use light modifiers, diffuser panels, bounce the light, move it back and forth, closer, further away relative to the subject in order to vary the output. So I still take it, but the other one that does work, I'm just going to take all the batteries out because you should never leave the batteries in your flash guns, especially double A's. So they've had like a bit of use today. They had stuff at the start of the day, but not a great deal. I also have here, and I'll just put those. This flash gun, I gather, would probably be about £130, something like that, to have it fixed. So if you think a new replacement flash gun in the current lineup of Nikon Speedlight, I don't know exactly, but you'd be looking in the range of sort of £300, something like that. So for me, as and when I get around to it, and I just haven't got around to it, because I'm not worried about having the latest and greatest flash guns, because I do everything manually, it is worth me, or will be worth me, paying for that repair, having it serviced, repaired, and all the rest of it. So I'm going to put those two in there. I used, for some of the portraits this morning with the sunrise, down on the sort of like the water's edge, I actually used a grid, which basically, it kind of softens the light and gives it more of a focused, targeted sort of like precision. You can point it to a specific area on a person or what have you. So on this occasion, I was using it to kind of highlight my subject's head and shoulders. Now, you can buy these, of course, and they're all different manufacturers that make them. I actually, many years ago, made my own using... let me just remind myself exactly whether it's all one material or if I varied it. Let's have a look. And I will do a post about this, actually, because, you know, people love the DIY sort of hacks that you can do. This basically is made completely out of duct tape and those kind of plastic hollow panels or sheets that you put, like, if ever you get prints back from the photo lab, it's often behind them to stop them getting dented or buckling and that sort of thing. I just kept a load, and I happen to have some, so I kind of fashioned them together into a sort of like a bespoke kind of grid that just slips absolutely perfectly on the front of my flash gun. Also have a kind of sort of like a what's they call it now, like a snoot, sort of like a longer kind of configuration, similarly but without the grid inside. That just directs it absolutely more pinpoint the light, but I didn't use that today. So that's that. Whilst we're talking about lighting, I will now tell you how I triggered those. I could, of course, have used the onboard flash on the D800 to send a little tiny flash, which wouldn't have affected the picture, but it would have triggered the speed lights by its little optical slave. But I decided not to do that. In a little pouch here, I have three, although only two were used, pocket wizards. These are the traditional plus two transceivers, and they have a range of, I think it's 1600 feet. It's either feet or meters, but I'm pretty certain it's feet. And, you know, they worked fine, you know, really good just for triggering the flash wirelessly. But again, I'm going to make sure that those batteries are taken out. They work really, really well. Realistically, if I was to go and give myself a budget to update all my lighting equipment, and that was to include triggers and all this sort of thing, do you know, these ones, they're not exactly bomb-proof, but they're quite basic. They always were, and the modern ones have got sort of LCD readouts and all this trickery, which is great, and they're a bit smarter looking and what have you. But I might be tempted to buy more of these. You know, one of them actually, it's the one I left in my case, I think, so I don't often take it if I don't need to. Yeah, it only receives a signal for some reason, I don't know why. Years ago, it just started doing that, so I just have it as a receive only. But typically what I do is I take three of these on the shoot. I have two that I'm going to be working with, and then a spare just in case one of them decides not to work. So I'm just going to move around, and there is a certain, bear with me, there is a certain way that these go into my case. Oops. These Pelly cases have been good, you know. I did a review on these many years ago, and they just keep on going. There we go. Oops, so I put those all together. I also have a little plastic clamshell case with a label that says Pocket Wizard Cables. That goes in with those. So those all live together. Then what else can I tell you? Let's have a look. So that pouch is all done. Those were just in the very front pockets, the external pocket of my backpack there. And for that, I just put them in a dry bag. You know, just to, it wasn't raining today, it was lovely and dry, it'd been a lovely day. But, you know, it keeps them all tidy. I didn't have to worry about them floating around in the bottom of the bag. What else? I've got a little Manfrotto, like, tabletop tripod with a sort of a phone adapter on it. I used that because we shot some time lapse behind the scenes stuff. I've also got a this is not strictly photographic, but I have a phone battery pack which is good for one whole charge, so I made sure my phone was 100% before I set out, and it actually got down to, where are we now, I've done all sorts of sort of behind the scenes stuff and snaps and all the rest of it. It's 18% as I record this. So it's done well. It's done well. Just going to have a sip of water. There we go. Very dry throat today. I'm just trying to shift a bit of a bug. And I think I'm doing all right with the speaking at the moment. Is there anything else in the front pocket? What else have I got here? Few accessories and so forth. Let's have a look what's here. Oops. Okay. Bum, 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 bum. Okay, so I've got a Drift HD, I think it was. a Drift HD, kind of like fisheye action camera, which is a bit like a GoPro, that sort of thing. Had that for a long time. Don't use it a lot, but it's really nice just for behind the scenes, just for something a little bit quirky. Chuck it in a corner in a tight space, corner of a room even. As I record this, I'm planning to do an overnight hammock camping trip, and I think I might do a little, kind of a little behind the scenes video to that, and I might actually take that and position it just kind of in one sort of corner, just to kind of get just a different angle inside under my tarp whilst I'm sort of sat on my hammock and all that sort of thing. Could be a bit of fun. Just always just having fun with it, trying different angles, trying different stuff. So there's that. I also have here, clipped to the outside, I have a small pouch with a Canon G7X point and shoot that was used for a little bit of behind the scenes video. Didn't use it a great deal. I often use my iPhone quite a lot now. But here's a top tip, and this goes back to an almost very unfortunate experience. A year or so ago, I was in Wales going up some mountains, and I had a backpack on, a regular backpack, with my G7X and this little pouch, as I have done so many times, attached using the chest strap. So the strap goes through the sort of belt loop, and that's great. And for whatever reason, I think I must have taken my pack off to get something out, put it back on, and off I went. And someone from sort of further down the sort of like approach hill, whatever, said, "Has anyone dropped a camera?" And what had happened, it had just slipped off that chest strap, and I would never have known. So what I do now is I still put it in the same place across the chest, because it's there ready to go should I need it. But I have a little, either a carabiner or an S-beaner, like a tiny one. For reference, I have currently, because it was the first one that came to hand, a Night Eyes number 2 S-beaner. This is a metal one. They do them in plastic. This one, actually, it's a couple of inches long and about an inch wide, and it can take up to 4.5 kilos. So that's 10 pounds. Really, really handy. But it's just that peace of mind that, like, when I take my pack off, obviously the chest strap will flap around with the pouch on it. This thing's not going to go anywhere. So that has come back safely with me. What else do I have? Oh yes, I've got a very small hammer ball and socket head, which is used on a tripod or a lighting stand, and I'll come to that in a moment. With the flash gun on top, so I can absolutely precisely angle and point the flash gun how it's needed. I also have, I have a little adapter here which allows me to put that same ball and socket head onto the top of my camera via the hot shoe, which of course is more usually used for flash guns or the pocket wizards. But that means I can also attach the the Drift camera to give a kind of first person view of the camera pointing, moving, shutter release going off. You can see what I'm shooting. Didn't do that on this occasion, but it's really handy for that. That lives in my camera bag, and sometimes it goes in my grip bag. I'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute. I think we've nearly unpacked the bag now. Yep, so I've got a couple of memory card cases. One of them is just like a standard one, and one is a Pelly one, which is sort of dust, dirt, water resistant. I did a review on that, and all these things will be linked in the show notes if you're listening and you want to find out more information. Those I will take and put straight in my bag, or in my roller case down here. Oops. For reference, I never wipe the memory cards that I've used until the next occasion that I need to use them, so the next shoot or the next set of pictures. It's just a built-in contingency. It's that, you know, they're backed up. Technically, they're backed up twice now. They're on a hard drive, they're on the memory card, and I've got a second memory card that they're backed up. So technically, three times, although if you count it in terms of locations, those two, being still in the camera, are in one location, if that makes sense. Case is almost empty. Top zip, I'm looking inside. Two flash feet. That's what the flash guns slide into, and then that is mounted onto a stand. And last but not least, in here we've got a spare battery for my D3, a spare battery for my D800, and a roll of electrical tape. And I'm putting it back into the pouch in my Peli case, which has, currently it's now got that tape, but it's got a little kind of multi-tool, very tiny one. It's got pliers, a knife, a screwdriver, and actually it's got more than I thought. This was a freebie at a press event, actually. It's made by Kathmandu, so it's got, it's not even a multi-tool as such, not like a Leatherman or anything like that, but it's basically got pliers, a knife, Phillips screwdriver, flathead screwdriver, nail file, yeah, and that's it. It's okay. It does the job. You know, if I needed to cut or pick something out, get some dirt out of the way, tighten up a screw somewhere, it's all right. But I didn't take that today. And I've also got a Sharpie in there. So that is now that bag completely empty. Oops, something's still attached to it. Ah, yes. Here we go. Oops. Attached to it on the outside in its own bag is the Manfrotto B3 carbon tripod, which came in very handy today. That was secured again. It goes down the side there, and that would be relying upon just the just like the side securing strap to hold it in place. That's not good enough, so I actually had a sort of full-size carabiner. I don't know what the breaking strain on it is. Literally a climbing grade screw gate carabiner that actually lives on top of the flip side backpack, so I'll put that back on there. There we go, move those out of the way. What else? So I've got the Manfrotto B3 tripod. I've got two packs of batteries, just AA rechargeable batteries. These are all 2900s. Yes, those are all charged up the night before, good to go. Those all belong in my Peli case, in the side where I have the adapter for on top of the camera. There we go. What else? Is that it? There was one other thing. Oh yes, so although I didn't use it, I thought I might have needed a softbox for like really to create a much bigger surface area, soft, diffused light source. So for that, I've got the Lastalite Easy Box, and I've got a couple of those. I think at the time they were, you'll probably remember me saying this, I always forget what it is, a meter square? I think they are. I think they're 1 meter square? 3 meters? They are the biggest versions they do, and I've got some sort of like internal screens that I can put up to reduce the overall size of the aperture that the light, the hole that the light comes through. That with a, yeah, it's basically the stand and the stand and the softbox all compacted, and inside here I just have to take out, oh, there is dirt from, that's not going to go straight in my case, I've got to clean that off. That is a Manfrotto, oh gosh, what are they called now? What are they called? I'll find out the details maybe and link to it. Basically, it's the 001 lighting stand. I've talked about these lots. They're light, you know, pretty lightweight, really nice, good for just putting your flash on. I have two of those, or I have... Well, there are two of them that live in my lighting stroke grip case in a separate Pelly case. I'll put that away once I've scrubbed off the dirt. But that is basically it. In terms of clothing, nothing particularly special. I had, you know, sort of just jeans and fleece, that sort of thing. Footwear were the Anatom Skytrail shoe, which I have recently reviewed. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that. They're very comfy, very nice. And then the other thing is I've got a Sub-Zero downfilled smock jacket, which has a hood, because I thought the hood could be quite cozy if the winds picked up a bit, and it actually didn't. In the end, it was very well behaved. That is basically it for my setup. So, you know, I haven't gone into detail specifically of the shots and what happened step by step. You know, the only other tool I had was my iPhone, and yeah, it was just kind of like a... Yeah, we took in multiple locations around the area, sharing a car. It worked out really well. So the next stage tomorrow will be to review the images and then upload them for the client through the back end of my website, which is all on lockdown, only visible by him and people that he wants to see them. And the process is that he will go through those and tell me which selection, an agreed selection, he wants to go ahead with. And, you know, I will prepare those, because I think I shot something like 240 pictures. And he's not going to have 240 pictures. A, that's not part of the package quota. But B, more importantly, that would be too many for him to have to get, you know, it'd be too bewildering, like, to have that many pictures. It doesn't help the client make a decision which picture to use, because so many of them are just variations, like the facial expression or the composition is ever so slightly different. We don't want to complicate matters. So that will be tomorrow. It's going to be an editing day. Well, not even editing, basically just doing a quick run through of the pictures, making sure that there's nothing obviously in there that clearly wouldn't be any use. So, for example, did he blink at the very last minute? And, you know, I was just in the process of shooting multiple pictures, so I didn't pick up on it. From memory, there were, because I know we made a comment about this during the shoot, there was only, from memory, there are only two shots where I noticed that he blinked in the pictures. So, and I got rid of those at the time. There's no point keeping those. So that's tomorrow, just working through the pictures, uploading the proofs for him to have a look at, and then... There is no rush, as far as I'm concerned, for him to give me an answer by the end of the day, by the end of the week, whatever. But I do know that he's very keen to get going with these pictures, putting them into action to start telling his story. You know, the what, how, why, where it is that, you know, what he does, you know. It's all about telling the story, and he has got a fantastic story, and I'll be talking to him on the podcast at a later date. And, you know, these pictures are designed to work for him, so the sooner I can get them to him for him to review and get him to give me his decision, ultimately stands to reason the sooner those pictures are going to be doing what they're intended to do, which, let's face it, is to get him new clients, which gives him his income. There we go. It's quite simple, really. I'm a commercial photographer, and these are commercially shot pictures designed for a purpose. So there we go. That is a very quick rundown of my kit as I unpack it. As ever, if you have any questions about anything I've talked about, from the kit I use to dealing with clients to locations that are challenging, you know, location choice, anything like that, anything that is on your mind, do let me know. But for now, I'll leave it there. By way of a follow-up to this show, I'll be talking through the resulting pictures from this shoot in another episode very soon. You can check out all the show notes to this and other week's shows at theactivephotographer.com. If you'd like to get in touch directly, don't forget I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Giles Babbage. There's the Facebook page, facebook.com/theactivephotographer. Or of course, send me a good old-fashioned email, giles@theactivephotographer.com. So thanks for listening, everyone. Take care, have a great week, and I will speak to you all very soon.